Thank you all for coming. It was a great opportunity for us to be able to get out and see you and kind of, we're about mid-session, we're about day 45, I think it is, middle of session. We are just finishing up the budget subcommittee process. We've closed out the budget subcommittees. We've taken public testimony all week. That finishes up today on the budget. And then when we get back to Juneau, these folks are going back tonight. I'll go back Monday morning early. And then we will start debating the full budget in the House Finance and hopefully get it to the floor of the House on the 2nd of March, 2nd or 3rd, then 3-4 days on the House floor and then over to the Senate. We met early December and laid out a schedule for trying to be done in 90 days. And so far, we're right on track on that schedule. But after the 6th or whenever we send that budget over to the Senate, we will lose track at how fast it moves beyond our control at that point. But right now, we are. So I brought some guests with me for a couple reasons. It's more brain power than anything. So first, on the far right is Neil Foster out of Nome. Neil is the chair of our House Finance. Probably knows the budget documents better than all of us combined. And not just the budget documents this year, but programs, formula programs that we have. Neil's very intimately familiar with most of them. So he's a great resource. And he's working this budget, and he's working all the finance members, but he also worked concurrently with the Senate leadership and finance on these issues. So they're pretty aware of what we're sending to them when we get there. Next is Representative Louise Stutes out of Kodiak, who's our majority whip. She's not on finance, but she's participating in what the House is doing every single day with all the members and with the Senate as well, and instrumental in our functionality, be honest with you, down there. And she does chair fisheries and transportation in the House side. So she's from Kodiak, so you can imagine her interest in fisheries. And then last guy that doesn't need much introduction is Representative Bryce Edgman out of Dillingham, is our House Speaker, and been in the House, is it a dozen years now? 14 years, and one of our more senior members in the House. As you guys know, that House membership has been about 50% turnover in the last couple years, so we really have a lot of freshmen in the House in the last 4 years, actually. It probably in excess of 50% turnover, and expecting quite a few new members again for the FY20 election cycle. So, a great speaker and a source of wealth. So glad to have all these folks joining me, and I've told them once how much I appreciate them being here. So what we brought you today is some slides we put together, and it's going to be a little history of the state's revenue picture, where our wealth come from, where our revenues come from, and what we've done with them over the years and where we're at today and how we're making that transition. And we'll talk some about numbers and the budget process as we have it. So I want to make this just as informal as we possibly can. Before I get there, I want to say that we've got some assembly members in the audience, assembly president, and I see assembly member Smalley and Bjorkman, and I think I saw Tyson Cox here earlier. Yeah, right back there. So and of course, my wife, I haven't seen in 6 weeks, so it's good to have him here. And other thing I need to, and then of course we have Linda Hutchins, who I think most everybody knows Linda, and she's here as well. And I see we have a spokesperson for the school district just walking in the door. So appreciate all you guys being here. And of course the school board president sitting over there, don't let me forget her. So, and I apologize to anybody I missed. I see Pam out of the mayor's office here. So we're going to move on. But what I wanted to say is that we want to make this as informal as we can. We want you guys to get out and ask the questions, mingle, anything. You know, everybody don't want to get up here and stand up in front of everybody and speak. So when we get all said and done, we're going to just get out and mingle with the crowd, and you guys can ask questions separately, collectively, whatever you'd like to do. We're going to open this up for a little bit. If you want to get up here and ask a question where everybody can see you and hear you, that's fine as well. But at the end of the day, I see we have Vince Beltrami with us as well. Thanks, Vince, for being here. So at the end of the day, we're going to get out and just talk with you guys. That's kind of our goal. But what we have is a set of slides that shows you where we're at today. As you know, it's been pretty contentious because we're at a point in our state's history, as I've talked about many times, we're at an unprecedented place in our state's history. We finally reached that point where 45 years ago, when Governor Hammond and the creators of the permanent fund talked about, is creating that permanent fund to help fund state services when oil revenues and revenues from other sources no longer met that need. And that's the transition we're making today, and the slides will reflect a lot of that. So I think I'm going to ask Mr. Edgman to just go ahead and get started. He's going to present the slides, and I think Representative Foster is going to kind of help join him if he needs assistance, walk him through it, and we'll turn it over to you, Bryce, and if you need something, you yell at me.
Well, thank you very much, Gary. Thank you all for being here this afternoon. I really appreciate the opportunity. I recognize a few of the faces that were here last year when we were down here. I think at that point we had, I'm guessing maybe 250 people that turned out, and many of you stayed well past 9 o'clock. We went into the evening, if I recall correctly. What we'd like to do today, as Gary was just mentioning, is sort of have a back and forth as we go through these slides to have this as interactive as possible, and to kind of give you an opportunity to look through our eyes as legislators and kind of see what we see when we have to wrestle with making decisions that, you know, many times are pretty weighty, but at this point, like Gary was saying, finds Alaska at a pretty interesting sort of intersection where we're transitioning away from funding state government on the backs of oil revenue, which we had the luxury of for many years, and now graduating into an era where the earnings from the permanent fund are playing as big, if not a bigger role than oil revenues. So we start with this slide, and what we had, by the way, can you see any of the small print in the back there? Jesse, can you see, it's too small? Well, most of these slides, I think, are gonna have prints.
Just say real quick, I was afraid of this. I'd forgotten these slides were on the side of the room. I was thinking there's one up behind us. So by all means, if you can't see them, please get up and mingle. Just stand up here, take a look at them. We want you to see them, and we'll go back and forth as many times as we need to talk about them. So, and I'll apologize for that. I was thinking we had a slide here, a screen here, and one in front. So, we need you guys to see the slides for sure. So,
well, we can certainly start off by pointing out, you can see the colors. I'm going to step back here a little bit and kind of look through your viewpoint. So what we're attempting to show here is the blue part is essentially before oil money. The black part from 1977 on to about 2013 is where state government was largely funded from proceeds from oil revenue. You can see the red with a little bit of a black band underneath it. That's the point where oil, had been $100 a barrel from 2007, 2008, 2009, up until about 2013, 2014. And then it plummeted down to like $26 a barrel of oil. And so for a period of time, we basically lived off of our savings accounts. And then the green part you can see at the very end there with a little bit of a shading of black underneath it basically signifies that we're now at a point where, as you'll see in some ensuing slides, we're using earnings from the permanent fund, the oil revenues that we're still getting, which are a much smaller band these days, and then also a third component of revenue in terms of state funding. And then we sort of end with a question mark, and henceforth the discussion we're having this afternoon, where do we go from here? What kind of choices do we make in terms of funding state government? How big should government be? How big should the permanent fund dividend be? Where should the funding sources come from? Should we be overdrawing the earnings reserve from the permanent fund? And we also want to show you, by the way, that we've essentially spent down those savings. And with that, do either of you have any more on this slide?
Just briefly, I want to mention that this section right here on this graph is really an important one. And you're going to see in this little bit another chart. But this transition in 2013 to 17, where we start spending savings, and as you guys know, the public, we've been criticized, really, really criticized for this. I mean, of course, before some of our time down there. But that's in 2013, and you'll see it in the slide coming up, when oil prices started to crash. It went from $120 a barrel down to about 30, and the line is straight down. And that's when legislators trying to adjust started spending savings. And so it's important to note, you see how the black drops off. That's where we started losing all our revenue. That's the period in time we started getting in trouble. And we've been compensating for that period since then. And we'll point that out when that other slide shows up. So.
Okay, we'll go to slide two. So people ask about oil revenue, and I think it's a very germane question. What this slide attempts to show is that, I guess our pointer doesn't work here very well, But the green line essentially points out the price of oil and how it's been up and down, and for a period of time, basically 2008 to 2013, we had a lot of revenue coming to the state, even though production had declined. You can see back in 1987, 88, that's about the peak of the flow of oil down the pipeline, about 2 million barrels a day. And it's now sort of plateaued at about 500,000 barrels a day. And the expectations are, the 10-year forecast that the Department of Revenue and Department of Natural Resources puts together, the expectations are for that 500,000 barrel a day output to basically remain about the same, with a high case scenario of 700,000 and a low case scenario below 400,000. So somewhere in between all of that mean. And of course, we can't predict the price of oil. We don't know what it's going to be as time goes on. But I don't think anybody in Juneau thinks for a moment that we're going to go back to this period right here where we had record revenues. We were able to put a lot of money away. Of course, those revenues, we've spent a lot of those savings accounts, the money that was in the savings account. But we now, of course, have the luxury of being able to turn to the earnings from the permanent fund, which slides down the way will help you understand in terms of where we're at with that as well. Neil?
I just want to point out, up until a few years ago, oil made up for 90% of our state's revenue. And you can see here back going, and do you have that pointer? I wonder if I can get it to work here. I guess it doesn't. So oil, there's one right there. Okay. Oh, I see. Yeah, well, if you go back into the mid-1980s here, you can see that we reached capacity, the Trans-Alaska Pipeline, capacity is 2 million barrels a day. And at that time, you had maximum capacity, but you had really low prices. But that was enough to sustain state government. And then over time, you saw that production has been going down. But what saved us, again, just to repeat here, is high prices. But now we're in this situation where we've got low production and low prices. And now oil makes up much less. It does not make up 90% of our state revenue now that the earnings from the permanent fund are now in play. I believe it's about two-thirds of our state's revenue. And so anyway.
So this next slide sort of builds on the forecast that we just pointed out for the next 10 years or so. And what this shows is a little bit more in definition. The orange is the largest field up in the slope, Prudhoe Bay. We're all familiar with Prudhoe Bay. Kuparuk is blue, and then the various satellites are in different colors here. And I guess the primary point is to show that, according to our best forecast at this point, and I guess keep in mind that forecasting 10 years down the road is, basically anybody's guess, but it also, it encompasses oil that's currently under production, oil that's soon to be in development, and also oil that is under evaluation, finds like Pikka and Willow and other things that may occur. So we're looking at, a continuum of about 500,000 or so barrels of oil with maybe an uptick, and if the best case scenario were to happen, it would come up to about 700,000. Worst case scenario is it would trend down, but somewhere within this band right here going forward. So that sort of sets the stage for you to be thinking that in the future, we're going to have a state government that's going to be funded in large part from the earnings of the permanent fund, but hopefully, we're going to have a steady supply of oil revenue to sort of supplement that as well. So this next slide right here really kind of tells a lot in the sense that, we were just talking about oil revenue, oil production, oil prices. Well, this is calendar year 2006 right here to where we're at now in 2019. You can see that the arc of our savings went up, and then of course it has come precipitously down to where we have what we think is sort of a almost dangerously low amount in terms of our primary savings account, which is the Constitutional Budget Reserve. A couple other things to think about is that the blue color is what's called the CBR, the Constitutional Budget Reserve. The orange is the statutory budget reserve, and that's a little bit of a gobbledygook if you don't sort of live and breathe this stuff every day as we do down in Juneau. But the important distinction is that it takes a three-quarters vote to get into this major count here for the legislature to spend. And interestingly enough, the last 5 of 6 years, we've had to go into special sessions, and primarily around the fact that it takes a three-quarters majority to get into these, to get into the Constitutional Budget Reserve, which means that the minority and the majority coalitions have to work together, have to come to agreement, which has been very difficult. And as we've been spending down savings accounts, we've also had to, you know, make tough decisions with the permanent fund dividend. And we'd like, you know, for this discussion to sort of encompass that feature, because there's some hard realities that we as legislators have to take into consideration as we make tough decisions. And you can see on the side here, maybe you can't read it in the back there, but we've basically at one point had about $16+ billion in savings. We put $3 billion of that into the unfunded liability portion of the retirement system, and we have subsequently been able to turn to our savings as a default, because we're a state that's lived off of oil revenue for many years, and I'll be the first to say we've had that luxury. We've been very lucky. We're a state that has not had to contemplate things like broad-based revenue measures or any other tough choices that other states have to make. But we're at the point now where we really don't have a lot in our savings accounts to turn to. And further slides are going to help amplify that point and help bring you into the conversation that we're having down in Juneau.
Just to go back to this one here again. So again, you had high production, low prices, and that allowed us to soften money into our savings. And then you also had here, you've got high prices but low production. We're still able to put money into savings, but now that you've got low production and low prices, we've had deficits. And to balance the budgets each year, what's happened is we've made cuts over the last, going back to 2013, and I might be jumping ahead some slides here, but the budget in about FY13 was $7.8 billion. We have cut that down to $4.3 billion. That's a $3.5 billion cut. That's a 45% cut over that time period. But that wasn't enough. And so what's happened now is you've also had to drain down savings. But the point of this is to show that we are almost out of savings. We need, just like any of us have a checking account, and you need to have a little bit of money left in your checking account so that you can pay your mortgage or your gas or repairs on your vehicle, the state needs to have a little bit of money left in its checking account. That number, that magic number, is about $1 billion. We're down to about $2 billion right now. We've got to figure out a solution. And I think as we go through this entire presentation, I guess what we're leading towards and what you can kind of keep in mind is we're leading into the permanent fund and describing, I guess, the POMV, which we can explain a little bit more later. But I just want you to keep that in mind for now. And so, again, the takeaway on this is we're about to the point where this option is going to be off the table. So,
just want to touch on one more thing here. So, let me see, clicker back one, two here. Just so. So you remember the first slide I started off talking about when we went from the black to the red, started spending savings in the 2013-14 time frame, and that's exactly what this revenue chart showing you, this immediate drop in revenue that we had, and that correlates with that same slide I showed you when we went from oil revenues to savings, and this chart again in 14 you see the savings starts to come down, 13 is about the peak, and 14 is starting to come down. What I don't know that they made it very clear, but the CBR account is the one that the state uses as its buffer for its cash flow management, and the debate is, of course, how much of that needs to be. And we've heard everything from $1.5 billion to as low as $500 million. And so, those who think that $1.5 billion is a little bit higher, $2 billion, And $2 billion is probably a little bit high in there, but there's nothing wrong with having a little extra savings. But there's debate about, can we take some of that savings to pay out larger permanent fund dividends, you know, and that's a point of contention for us who are looking for stable fiscal solution. Yeah, we could this year, but we sure couldn't do it next year, you know, and so we're very reluctant to boost up a permanent fund dividend that we can't sustain. So we're looking for a dividend amount that's sustainable based on the revenues we got coming forward. So I wanted to get that out there.
So, and by the way, if there's any questions or any need for clarifications, you want us to go back a slide or a couple of slides, just raise your hand. We'll gladly do that. So this slide right here is pretty busy. But what this slide attempts to do is sort of to wrap its arms around some of the stuff that we just went through. And I'm going to walk up here. You can see the blue backdrop is essentially the revenue picture that we presented to you along with oil production. The bars right here are everything from what the state agency spending has been to a bunch of other categories called statewide operations, oil tax credits, retirement payments, community assistance, items that are just sort of spread around the state are put in its own category called statewide operations. And then the light blue, if you can see that from where you're at, is the capital budget. So again, a couple things to sort of think about on this slide. One is that you can see the rise and fall and the volatility and sort of the boom bust cycles of it all that we're also familiar here in Alaska. But as well, what we don't have on this slide is the fact that this is inflation adjusted. So you can see, if I go over here to 1982, this yellow part right here in terms of state spending is roughly, you know, comparable to where we're at in 2019. So a lot of people say, well, state spending is really just bloated. It's growing sort of uncontrollably. Legislators are spending like drunken sailors, this, that, and the other. But when you look at the actual amount that's being spent over the years, that's not really the case. And also keep in mind that the population back here in the early 80s was somewhere around the 400,000 mark. Today, it's about 740,000 people. So, you know, you can look at this in more than one way. There's no question that there's downward pressure being put on spending. We're going to talk about a spending cap that the legislature will be taking up this session as well. But this, I think, puts into context that by and large, state spending, you can see how it's spiked up these years. It followed the fact that we had a lot of oil. But when, our revenues have come down and we've had to dip into savings, we've also retracted the amount of money we've been spending on operations. And then the capital budget, this light blue right here, in terms of state spending, has really for the last 4 or 5 years been down to the minimal amount it takes to match federal spending in terms of having a viable capital budget.
Question.
So can you take those numbers right there and take an average, and that's what your budget should be?
So the legislature puts the budget together every year. We operate on an annual budget. And we're talking about, that conversation about what the right size of state government should be, how much should be spent on education, health and social services, corrections, Department of Military Veterans Affairs, and just all on down line. And we're going to get into more detail with that. But the takeaway I would point out, and this is statewide operation, state agencies, all 14 or so of them, you know, if you adjusted for inflation proofing, we're not far off the mark from where we were in the early 80s. I mean, that's just the whole reality of it all. And, you know, I don't think any of us are here to sort of advocate that that's too high or too low, but more to share with you that these are what the numbers show. And we welcome your input and let you know that the legislature has been working hard to reduce spending. It's come down quite a bit in the last few years. And honestly, I would tell you my opinion. I think we're at a point, and even with Governor Dunleavy's budget, where we've kind of plateaued. You know, spending is going to be, you know, maybe it's up a bit or maybe it's down a little bit, but it's going to be in this band going forward because that's about the basic amount it takes to run the state.
So, Dale, your question was, could we average it across there? Was that?
I mean, you just take all those numbers right there and then take an average and then work your balance in that. kind of how, you know.
So I think I understand what you're trying to get to. Let me just say a couple of the unknowns. So obviously you can see in the when we talked about spending savings in the 14-15 loss of revenue, 14-15-16 savings, capital budgets are pretty much non-existent, as Speaker just said. This red section he didn't touch on, that's the year in 2018 where we started using interest earnings to help fund government. And you can see how much of that revenue now makes up the portion of the state's revenues in that red block there. But what, going to your point is when you talk about averaging or controlling spending, the example, so last year in governor's budget, 2019 budget, it was the one he did all the vetoes in, is that correct? FY20, calendar year. So FY20 budget when the vetoes happened. So we went back in this year and got hit with about a $500 million supplemental. It was not all UGF dollars, some of them were federal dollars, but about $270 million the governor requested to make up for things that you couldn't anticipate. One of the two biggest cost drivers in that was all the forest fires we had this year cost us about $110 million more because it was really underfunded last year. So he asked us for supplemental budget. And then some of the Medicaid expansion, roughly 80, 90 million, Pioneer Homes, there was another big one there, API, Alaska Psychiatric Institute, and other little things. But it got up to about $270 million. So just yesterday we learned that when you put the add-ons back in, the FY20 amended budget is actually higher than what FY19 was, even after all of his vetoes, you know. So that's kind of how that works on that. So you don't really know what you're going to be till you get through the year and the supplementals come in. That fairly accurate, Neil? Okay.
And just your question is, could we average? So all of these bars are annual appropriations, the expenses, and then the blue here is our total revenue. And I would say if you look at here where we came in with last year's budget, it's just above this line right here. That looks to me like that's about the average, pretty close to the average of prior year budgets. You know, here you've got some that are a lot higher. You've got these that are a little bit lower. These are a good deal lower. But I think overall it's probably pretty close to being average. I just wanted to add on to this here, just to step back a little bit and maybe restate, but what was said. The blue here again is the revenue over the years, and these bars are the expenses. And so you can see if the blue is higher than the bar, that means we had a surplus that year. And then here, like for example, here or here, you can see our expenses were high, our revenue is very low. And again, what we're leading into here is with a low price of oil, low price of and low production, that gap is pretty significant, and this is where we'll start to, I think, lead into what's going on with the earnings reserve of the permanent fund. So.
Yeah, and so Dale, if you might want to like hold that question, because I think we've got some slides that could sort of bring us a little bit closer into maybe a more tangible answer for you, but. I think one point I would leave you on as we move to the next slide is that constitutionally we're required to do so much for education, health and social services. Of course, we need to have a capital budget of some sort. We need to fund Department of Corrections. We need to fund Department of Law. You know, we need to fund, there's programs in Department of Commerce in terms of regulatory things that the state needs to do. You know, we have to provide those services. So.
If you kind of know what they're going to be anyways.
Well, yes and no. I could say largely some, but others, I think Neil has pointed on, are formula driven, like Medicaid. So as Gary was just pointing out a moment ago, we have a sort of a cleanup budget, if you will, that's going to add more money into Medicaid last year that we maybe didn't know that we were going to have to fund. So some things we are, you know, come to us relative to, you know, like forest fires and things like that. But I'd like to save that question, and I think we can get into more detail as we go along here. So again, this builds off of the earlier slides about revenue. The blue is oil, This is the earnings from the permanent fund. We're now in our third year of using earnings from the permanent fund to help make up the gap in oil revenues. The gray on the very top is sort of what's called an other category. That's everything from fishing to mining to cigarette taxes, insurance taxes, corporate income taxes, marijuana taxes now are sort of creeping up in terms of what they're providing the state treasury. But again, the big takeaway on this is that we've oil revenue has basically been the sole driver of state government up until recently, where we've had to use savings as well as drawing down money from the earnings reserve. So we're going to sort of segue here into talking a little bit about the permanent fund and the permanent fund dividend. And we put this slide in because we wanted to show you that from our perspective as policymakers, we have to keep the long term in mind. And as you can see, the earnings of the permanent fund, the permanent fund itself, have been up, it's been down. In a couple of years, it's been, it took quite a nosedive. 2008, we almost didn't have a PFD. I think it was the fourth quarter that rallied and allowed us to pay a PFD, as well as when we had a dip here in the late 90s, when oil was back at $8 and $9 a barrel. But the average return, these are inflation adjusted numbers, are somewhere in the 6 to 7% rate. And another sort of important takeaway I'd like for you to think about, or at least be prepared to ask us questions about, is that the next 10 years, the forecasted average is going to be considerably lower in terms of inflation-adjusted returns. So, again, as policymakers, we're entering our third year of using revenues from the earnings of the permanent fund in a way that helps offset those oil revenues that aren't there anymore. But you now have the earnings from the permanent fund, albeit a bigger permanent fund that's grown over time, but you have those earnings having to do two things. Not only pay for essential state services to one degree, but also to pay a permanent fund dividend. That's a critical feature of what Alaskans expect us to get done in Juneau.
Just want to ask you to keep your eye on that chart. Remember that chart, the spike at the bottom in 2008 is down about 20%. And then I guess in about 2000, that was down about 6%, it looks like. So keep your eye on them two spikes, because we're going to talk here in a little bit about the earnings reserve account and what that's used for, and the balance in that, and why. But that's a good spike to remember right there.
And I just wanted to add, the reason it's so important to look at what the returns are is because right now the projection is the permanent fund will earn over the next 10 years about 7% per year. And right now, the rule that we've established is we shall not take more than 5% of that, because you want to leave, you want to allow it to continue to grow. We've also got the inflation proofing. So once you do, so you can see the delta, the change, the difference is about 2%. And then we also do inflation proofing. Last year, we added $641 million. But again, the reason that this is important is you don't want to have the fund earning 7%, but then take 10%, because now you're just going to eventually deplete that fund. And so again, right now the rule that's been established is the first 3 years, technically it was 5.25%, and then after that it'll be 5%. So
moving along here, this is a slide that certainly captures people's attention. This is the graph that shows you what the size of the PFD was going back into time. You can see the blue dotted line. It shows you about the mean average. It was about $1,100 going back 35, 36 years that we've had a permanent fund dividend, back since the first check was issued in 1982. You can see there's been some interesting spikes up and down. And to put every card on the table, it's been 4 years since the legislature has followed the 1982 statute. That's been a very controversial move, and I think it bears, sort of a candid conversation about it. And some of you may be very unhappy about that and have points that you want us to know about. But at the same time, we've had permanent fund dividends that have gone above 2,000. 2008, you all remember when Sarah Palin gave us a $1,200 additional check, which actually took us beyond the 82 statute as well. And then the last 4 years, and this too contributed to the legislature going into special session, because the permanent fund dividend has been very, very controversial throughout the state, the size and how much is paid to each eligible recipient. Like to point out that the last 2 years, the permanent fund dividend has been $1,600 and $1,606. And in order for the legislature to make ends meet with a $1,600 PFD, we've essentially had to dig into savings about $500 million. And like we pointed out earlier, we don't have those savings anymore to dig into. So we're at the intersection now down in Juneau, where we do essentially one of three things. We cut the budget in a significant way to keep a bigger PFD. We somehow find new revenues, which I'll be the first to tell you, I don't think is on the table in a big way this session. Or we overdraw from the earnings from the permanent fund, and I'll explain to you here with some slides down the way what that means. We either overdraw from the earnings of the permanent fund, or we take our one last savings account, which we have shown you is down to a very sort of perilous $2 billion mark. And you know, those are basically our choices. They're all difficult choices. The good news, and I think this is something we probably should be sort of emphasizing more, it's not a revenue problem. We've got about $5.1 billion in projected revenue. It's a prioritization issue. How much goes to essential services? How much goes to a PFD? How much goes to a capital budget? How much goes to finding other components of state government? That's the conversation we're having in Juneau, and it's a tough conversation, you know. And we're looking at a budget that we think right now is pretty status quo. And but at the same time, we need to figure out how to pay a dividend that we think Alaskans deserve to get, but that it's also sustainable looking into the future.
Yeah, thanks for that. Yeah, so that, you know, I've been asked many times what size PFD should we have, and I said you should have the PFD that we can afford, you know. And I'm glad Bryce talked about the options of overdrawing the earnings reserve account, spending down the last savings, cutting budget. You know, as the prior graph adjusted for inflation, our spending is right in line with what we did in the late 80s. It's not excessive today. It's a point we wanted to make. Spending down savings, as you guys know, at some point you will run out of savings and you don't have that option. So what we did last year, in my opinion, was foolish. We dropped about the rest of the statutory budget reserve and a couple hundred million from the constitutional budget reserve just to boost it to 1,600. And my fear was that we couldn't sustain that, and that's where we're at this year, not sustain it. We could sustain it if we took it from the CBR account, which takes a three. Mike's in and out here, apologize for that. So, but that's the challenges we're getting, you know. And so the fiscally responsible thing to do is downward pressure on the budget and pay out the dividend that we can afford that doesn't take any more from savings. And that's our struggle. But, you know, every single one of us love that dividend. I love it as much as everybody in this room. And we all use it in a different way, and that's simply our prerogative to do so. But I can tell you in rural Alaska and some of the other places, they use it for a lot of necessities, absolute necessities, you know. And so it makes these discussions even more difficult when you realize the need in some communities for that PFD, you know. So, Neil, anything to add?
No. I guess just kind of off the cuff, you had mentioned, you know, you've got different parts of the state, and I tell people in my area, I say, you know, it's hard to balance what are you going to do with cuts and the PFD and draining savings and additional revenue. Like, how do you put together something that makes everybody in our district happy? And then how do you get 40 representatives, 20 senators, and a governor to agree on something? I mean, it's a difficult, difficult thing, so.
So we wanted to make this point, you know, we've all given this presentation at one time or another in the past, and the issue of whether or not permanent fund earnings flow through the normal legislative budget process or not has come into question. And actually, the Wilikowski lawsuit, which some of you may be familiar with, brought this whole sort of question to the Supreme Court. And the Alaska Supreme Court said, no, we think that the permanent fund, anything that's spent from the permanent fund should go through the legislative budgeting process and be a normal item, just like education funding or health and social services or so forth. And what the Supreme Court rules is how we go forward. So what this schematic sort of depicts is that to take it a step further, every year we have to make the choice between how much of the earnings of the permanent fund that we're allowed to spend go to PFDs and then go to the core purposes of state government. Question?
Yes, sir. Prior to that ruling from the legislature, where you're pointing that it was through the budget, prior to that, how was the PFD paid?
Yes.
Or that there was no question. In other words, it didn't have to be sent to a court. How was it paid if it wasn't already being paid through the legislature?
Yeah, so that's a real good question. The question is, prior to the Supreme Court ruling in 2017, how were the earnings from the permanent fund, which principally was the PFD at that point, paid? And the answer is that it did go through the legislative budget process. It was challenged in 2017, and the Supreme Court affirmed the fact that the legislature has the appropriation powers. Now, it's interesting because when the 82 statutes, the permanent fund corporation, the dividend, all of that essentially is a product of the 1980-82 era. And back then, if you go and look at Title 37, which I did yesterday just to make sure before I came down here, it says that these earnings are to be transferred essentially, in a manner that would bypass the budget, the appropriations process. But the legislature over the years has appropriated them, and I can't answer why that is, but the Supreme Court affirmed it and said that's the proper course of action, because in our Constitution we can't have what's called dedicated funds. And that's a whole different discussion. We can talk about that if there's a need for more clarity on that. But I wanted to just sort of point this out so it was pretty clear as we go into these following slides that the legislature has to appropriate the earnings in a manner that separates it out between the PFD and the needs of government.
So, but I think to your question, there was in statute a formula that calculated how much money could be transferred and then divided by number of population. That was the size of your check. That's the formula that's been used for 40 years. It wasn't four years ago when Governor Walker vetoed that first 50% of that dividend payout that all this coming to. Governor Walker had the foresight in his financial divisions to see this problem coming. He started that ball rolling. So until that point, it was never a question, never an issue. And I got to say, he was probably way ahead of us in the legislature on this financial picture. And that's the reason he did that. And so that's what started this ball rolling about the question of how it's calculated. And so you can see today, the funding simply isn't there to pay it. It simply isn't there when we started spending that savings. But that's how it has changed since that time.
So what we're trying to do with this slide is to show you sort of pictorially how this annual draw works that we've been describing throughout each of these slides and trying to put it into a picture. I'll do my best to try not to get you confused, but if you look at the blue part here, this is the part of the permanent fund that's constitutionally protected. That's the corpus. The orange part is what's called the earnings reserve. That's the part that the legislature with a simple majority can at any time tap into and spend to whatever purpose they deem appropriate. But in 2018, essentially 2 years ago, at the behest of the trustees of the permanent fund and others, we put into law what's called a structured draw, or if you want to use the term PUMV, percentage of market value approach, amount that basically allows the legislature to take 5% of the overall value of the fund. If you go back 5 years, average that out, take that 5%, which in the current fiscal year we're now in is about $3.1 billion. Last year was $2.9 billion. So this year it's $3.1 billion. We take that, and like we were pointing to you a moment ago, the appropriations process, we appropriate that out to PFDs and the state government.